Hey, what's up? This is Gustavo Arellano. Every Friday, we're turning over the mic to one of my awesome LA Times colleagues, and today we welcome Molly Hennessy Fisk. She's a national correspondent who has covered everything from the George Floyd protest, where she and LA Times photographer Carolyn Cole were tear gassed by Minneapolis police, to hurricanes in the South and other stories beyond. But in recent years, she has focused on what's going on in the U.S.-Mexico border as immigrants from Latin America try to come into this country.
I'm Molly Hennessy Fisk. You're listening to The Times, daily news from the LA Times. Today is September 3rd, 2021. Before we begin, let me fill you in on the situation at the U.S.-Mexico border. The U.S. saw a historic number of illegal border crossings this summer, reaching a 21-year high, according to figures released by U.S. Customs and Border Protection last month. Why is this happening? One reason, thousands of migrants are waiting in northern Mexico, some for months, to claim asylum in the U.S., because President Biden extended a Trump-era pandemic policy that effectively bars them from entering the country. In Mexico, the migrants, many from Central America, are at risk of being kidnapped, extorted, and killed by smugglers. Yet more decide to make the dangerous journey to the border every day, seeking refuge in America. This summer, I spent a lot of time in Texas's Rio Grande Valley, the busiest stretch of the border for illegal crossings, talking to migrants at the river and after they were detained by Border Patrol. I shadowed Border Patrol there with photographer Gary Coronado and to the north in notoriously dangerous ranch land. While we were with them, they found a woman's body. Her relatives had been looking for her, and a local migrant advocate put us in touch with them. We visited the Salvadoran family at home in Houston and ultimately accompanied them to the funeral. Here is their story. Black feathers fell from circling vultures and snagged in the matted yellow grass. The ranch manager eyed the terrain and followed the stench. He found the woman's body, like so many others in the South Texas brush, splayed in the weeds, arms dark with decay, raised above her head as if in surrender. The rancher knew what to do. He had come upon 15 such migrants over the years. He called Brooks County Sheriff's dispatchers. They issued a code 500, a dead body call, summoning a deputy, two Border Patrol agents, a justice of the peace, and a funeral director. They met the rancher shortly before noon at the gate of Los Palos Ranch, about 75 miles north of the border. Together, they waded through knee-high, thorny weeds, mindful that the June heat rouses rattlesnakes from their burrows. The men gazed down to where she lay, face gone, skull picked clean by scavengers, hair and lower jaw dragged a few feet from a body not yet skeletal. They guessed that the woman had died of exhaustion or dehydration. The deputy wrapped the body in a white sheet. He then lifted it into a gray bag and helped the funeral director load it into the back of his Ford Explorer for transport to the sheriff's morgue. It would be fingerprinted and tested for the coronavirus. The men found no trace of a name. It would be days before fingerprints told investigators that the woman was Rosario Yanira Giron de Orellana, a 41-year-old single mother who had traveled more than 1,500 miles from El Salvador. Brooks County and the Rio Grande Valley to the south have been popular smuggling routes for decades, a reliable barometer of migrant deaths border-wide. 6 months into 2021, deaths in the county had already reached 55, up from a total of 34 last year and above the five-year average. Migrants here often dial 911 from their cell phones, stranded without water and begging for help. Some days this summer, officials recovered three bodies. All were adults, more than half male. Their identification was from Central America or Mexico. Relatives searching for missing migrants this summer have flown in from as far as California and New York. Unlike the Arizona desert, another migrant death trap, South Texas ranch land at first glance appears verdant, but it's a deadly mirage. Temperatures climb to nearly 100 degrees. Of the county's 944 square miles, about twice the size of the city of Los Angeles, only a fraction of a square mile has water. Los Palos and other ranches have cattle troughs and tanks, but they're teeming with bacteria, and migrants who drink from them have died. Those who don't succumb to the elements are sometimes abandoned by smugglers. Agents and deputies do what they can to patrol suspected smuggler drop-off and pickup spots, including County Road 107, the road closest to where Rosario's body was found, a mile-long stretch of caliche that dead-ends at Los Palos Ranch. Migrant advocates have placed more than 150 blue barrels of water on local highways. But Rosario was discovered miles from the road, beyond sight of the barrels. She had been found without a purse, phone, passport, or other identification. Her black hair was cinched in a blue scrunchie. Her black striped shirt was pulled up to reveal a pink lace bra above black pants. Smugglers often instruct migrants to dress in black. Good camouflage at night, but brutally hot after sunrise. The deputy checked her pockets. Nothing. She wore no jewelry, just a plastic rosary and a string of rainbow beads with a medallion that said, in Spanish, "Virgin, please guide my path." I spoke to Maria Huezo, Rosario's older sister, at her home north of Houston. She said Rosario was very religious. She was so respected in their Catholic community, people cried when they heard Rosario had left.
Ella fue como una maestra en la iglesia también, por catequismo.
Daban catecismo, uh-huh, a los niños de comunión. Uh-huh. Ella tuvo ahijados. Primero una muchacha tranquila y luego después pues una señora que respetaban en el pueblo.
Uh-huh. Y creo que las señoras de la iglesia estaban llorando cuando ella saliste.
Eso sí me lo platicó mi mamá, que se fue y que todos estaban llorando y que... Pero una cosa bien rara, dijo mi mamá. Igual cuando se supo la noticia de lo que pasó con ella, estaba su casa llena de toda esa gente, preguntando si era verdad o era una noticia equivocada.
Maria said that when people in town found out about Rosario's death, they thought it was fake. They couldn't believe it. We'll have more after this break. Rosario grew up the daughter of a farm worker in the coastal town of San Julian, population 22,000 in El Salvador. She was slender, shorter than 5 feet tall, the second of nine siblings, some of whom described her as a second mother, a homebody they nicknamed Chaito. Again, here's Rosario's older sister, Maria Huezo.
Ella era de, como de grupo juvenil. Así se dice en El Salvador cuando los jóvenes nos juntamos y rezamos o a veces cantamos o leen la Biblia y entre todos lo comentan. Incluso cuando ella hizo su quinceañero, no hizo un quinceañero así con el baile y la comida, sino que hizo, se dice allá, una celebración de palabra donde van todos los adultos y chiquitos y grandes y no importa que estén.
Devout and headstrong, Rosario celebrated her quinceañera not with a party, but by reciting the rosary with friends and family at home.
Porque cuando invitas a la quinceañera normal, estás mirando a tus mejores amigos nada más y la gente joven. Y cuando es de religioso, no importa que estén viejitos y así. Ella hizo una celebración de palabras.
She loved her namesake roses, but rarely received them. Married at 21, she had a daughter, Adriana Orellana de Giron, then in recent years separated from her husband and moved back home. Rosario seldom went out, She mainly attended church, where she taught catechism classes. Rosario raised not only her daughter, but also her siblings, nieces, and nephews. She took them to school, to church, and to a local park, helped them with their homework, and put them to bed. She watched most of them depart for the U.S. and settle where her father had, in Houston, before he was deported 11 years earlier. Rosario never spoke of migrating. In November, she celebrated her daughter's quinceañera, buying her sleeveless aqua dress and speaking eloquently about her passage into womanhood. But privately, her sister said, Rosario worried that Adriana, at age 15, had grown old enough to be targeted by gangs that ruled the neighborhood.
Cuando ella me llamó y dijo que se había decidido venir, yo le hice ver como más o menos los peligros y el cambio que podía tener su vida, más que nada con la niña, porque ellas estaban tan acostumbradas a hacer todo juntas. Y aquí eso no es posible porque los niños aquí apenas salen de la high school, empiezan a trabajar, a hacer su vida independiente de uno, de mamá, y pues toca soltarlos y empiezan a su camino más rápido que en El Salvador. Yo le dije todo eso y ella dijo que no importaba porque ella quería que la niña estuviera mejor, que estuviera bien.
When she would call me, I would tell her that life is very different here, recalled Rosario's older sister Maria. She told Rosario, here there is work, but you have no time for your kids. There you are with your kids, but there is no work. Maria had crossed the border illegally about 20 years earlier. She didn't feel she had the right to tell anyone else not to come. But neither she nor her relatives had traveled north on foot. And none had arrived since President Trump was elected and cracked down on asylum seekers.
After July 4th, a lot of people are going to be brought back out. So people that come up may be here for a short while, but they're going to be going back to their countries. They go back home.
Pues yo sí me sorprendí mucho porque yo así estaba de segura. Nunca me imaginaba que Rosario, nunca me imaginaba yo mirarla un día acá. O sea, que ella decidiera venirse porque yo pensaba que ella tenía allá una vida... No bien, porque pues allá hay mucha pobreza y todo, ¿verdad? Pero yo nunca pensaba que ella tenía como... Porque para decidir agarrar ese camino se necesita mucho valor. Y ella nunca no había salido de la casa. Ella nunca tuvo que ir a trabajar lejos de la casa. Ella no sabía defenderse en la vida, en las calles, en el mundo, con las personas que no conoce.
Maria told me she never imagined Rosario would migrate to the U.S. She said that to decide to take this path, you have to be brave, and that Rosario never left the house, that she didn't know how to defend herself in the street, in the world. On March 16th, at about 6 a.m., Rosario said goodbye to her mother and caught a ride with her daughter north. It would take them 15 days, moving from town to town, before they reached the Mexican border city of Reynosa. Rosario knew from talking to other migrants that if she crossed the border with Adriana, the Border Patrol would send them back to Mexico due to pandemic restrictions. But if Adriana went without an adult, she would be released to relatives in Houston. Rosario didn't tell her daughter that she was sending her across the border alone until they parted on April 2nd. She arranged for a fellow migrant mother traveling with the group to pick Adriana up. When the woman arrived, Rosario took the girl aside and told her they'd reunite later. Adriana would later tell me what happened next. There would be about 10 migrants in the group, all eligible to enter the U.S. because they were either mothers with young children or youths like Adriana without their parents. Thin, shy, and small for her age, Adriana didn't know how to swim, but she followed the other migrants onto an inflated raft and across the Rio Grande. they were soon detained by the Border Patrol. Adriana was held for several weeks, then was released to her family in Houston with permission to stay until her asylum case is decided. Due to a court backlog, her first hearing isn't until next January. Meanwhile, Rosario had crossed the border to a smuggler's stash house in the Rio Grande Valley, where she stayed for a couple of weeks. She had a Salvadoran cell phone and sent WhatsApp messages to her daughter via her brother in San Julian. "Don't worry, daughter, we are good," she wrote at 8 p.m. May 26th. "We walked 2 days and two nights, and we are in a place where we can rest." Then the messages suddenly stopped. That scared Rosario's six siblings in the U.S. None had been incommunicado during their journeys north, unless they were detained by the Border Patrol. Days later, Rosario's sister, Vilma Giron, started receiving WhatsApp messages from a stranger with the Salvadoran number who claimed to have migrated with Rosario. That message came from an Oscar C. He said that when Rosario stopped walking on a ranch May 29th, fellow migrants left her behind with water and a cell phone. Rosario's relatives were initially afraid to contact U.S. authorities because many of them had entered the country illegally. Instead, they phoned the South Texas Human Rights Center, which distributes the water barrels and fields calls from families searching for missing migrants. Volunteers agreed to help them search and relayed information to the Border Patrol. One of Rosario's brothers and a nephew, Maria Huezo's son, both of whom were in the country legally, traveled from Houston to Brooks County to search for her on June 3rd. Maria texted Oscar for more information, and he responded that Rosario could be at the edge of a sandy street in front of a ranch. The next day, Oscar sent Maria a Google Maps location for Rosario. She forwarded the coordinates to her son in Brooks County. He and his uncle got within 2 miles of where Rosario's body was later found, but were stopped by a locked ranch gate. Nearby, they saw discarded shoes and water jugs. Here's Abelardo Giron, Rosario's younger brother, describing that search.
Hay muchos botellas de agua, bastante. Zapatos, camisas en los cercos. Y los voluntarios dejan botes de aguas azules.
¿Y qué pensabas de este lugar? ¿Cómo sentió allá?
Lo primero que dije es que, pues que no la agarró migración porque ahí no entra nadie. Ahí en la ubicación que nosotros teníamos, ahí no hay migración ya. O sea, ya no es posible que a ella la hayan agarrado migración. Es lo primero que uno piensa porque llega uno a los portones y hay cámaras por todos lados, donde obviamente es prohibido la entrada.
The next day, Maria Huezo messaged Oscar again. Maria was still unsure if it was in fact Rosario who we saw. She asked, "What kind of shoes did she wear?" Oscar replied, "Gray shoes with pink on the outside." Maria had seen a photo of Rosario taken just before she left for the U.S., in which she wore gray and pink Nikes. And in that moment, she knew it was her sister. She tried to send Oscar more questions. He never answered. Oscar did not respond to messages from the Times either, except to say, "Thank you for writing the article. I am really the last person to contribute." We'll have more after this break. It's not clear how Rosario died. Her family wonders why she was found without her documents or phone, and why she never called 911 for help. Authorities didn't conduct an autopsy. The mystery of how she ended up alone in the brush may never be solved. Her relatives would never view her body, dress her, or place a rosary in her casket. Rosario's family let her daughter decide where she would be buried, El Salvador or the U.S. Adriana wanted her mother nearby, where she could visit the grave. Rosario's sister, Maria Hueso, and two brothers, between shifts at McDonald's, built an altar to Rosario, encircled by candles and the roses she had loved, in their double-wide trailer. They recited the rosary for 9 nights, the traditional novena, and they helped their parents apply for humanitarian visas from the U.S. government to attend her funeral on June 29th. The visa requests were denied. Instead, Rosario's parents watched the funeral mass on Facebook Live. Relatives wore white t-shirts embossed with black rosaries and a quote, "Today we take different paths, but I will always take with me what I learned from you." In Houston, by the time they reached the cemetery, a thunderstorm had rolled in. Adriana stood beside her mother's grave in sneakers and a pleated black skirt. She sobbed as the casket was lowered, embracing a young uncle, one of many relatives her mother had raised. The rain stopped. The family released a white string of balloons shaped like a rosary. Adriana selected her mother's headstone, gray granite, with two vases attached for her roses. It was installed last month, around the same time Adriana started high school in the U.S.
And that's it for this episode of The Times, daily news from the LA Times. Next week, The Times will take a deep dive into the California gubernatorial recall election. You don't want to miss it. Like what you're listening to? Then make sure to follow The Times on whatever platform you use. Please, please, please don't make us the Pucci of podcasts. Our show is produced by Shannon Lin, Denise Guerra, Marina Peña, and Melissa Kaplan. Our engineer is Mario Diaz. Our editors are Shawnee Hilton and Lauren Rabb. Our theme music is by Andrew Epin. Special thanks to Julia Turner, Hector Becerra, Shelby Grad, Steve Padilla, and Hiba El Orbani. I'm Gustavo Ariano. We'll be back Monday with all the news and desmadre. Gracias.